Welcome to Rhode Island Avenue Radio, where we'll talk about news, education, and opportunities for small businesses on the Rhode Island Avenue Main Street and in Washington, D.C. I'm Michelle Yancey.
And I'm Kyle Todd. Welcome to Rhode Island Avenue Radio.
Welcome back to another episode of Rhode Island Avenue Radio. Today is, it's Friday.
Today's Friday. What episode number is it?
I've lost count.
I know.
How you doing, Michelle?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. Well, we're just going to go ahead and dive in. We've got a couple of great guests here in the studio with us today. But first, as always, we're going to check in with Philip from Good Food Market. Philip, are you there?
I sure am. How's it going?
All right. Good morning, Philip. How's everything going with you?
It's going good.
How's everything down at the market?
It's great. Just stocking up on some summer stuff like citronella sticks.
Ooh.
Keep those mosquitoes away.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Getting ready for the next Fit to Farm to Table cooking class on Thursday the 16th. Starting off over at the Langan Garden at 6 o'clock, where we'll do a little gardening lesson and then some fitness in Langan Park with Capoeira Mollus here on Rhode Island Avenue, right next door to Good Food Market. And then finishing up at 7 o'clock at the Woodridge Library for a cooking demo led by Chef Teresa Rosser, who's a UBC nutrition specialist.
Very cool. And
yeah.
So we might have some new listeners because anything's possible.
Right.
Where's the Langdon Gardens?
Langdon Gardens is at 24th and Franklin. So that's at the kind of far northeast corner of Langdon Park there. And then we'll kind of go through the park with Ren from Capoeira Mollus, do a little light movement-based exercise, and then we'll wind up at the Woodridge Public Library, which is at 18th Street, right across the street from Seabury.
And you're actually going to do cooking classes there?
Yeah, we do cooking classes at the library every month and try to feature some seasonal fare. Whatever's coming in fresh that week, we'll shop the shelves and find a good recipe, and we raffle off a bag of groceries that has everything you need to make the recipe and recipe cards, and talk about different cooking techniques and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, wow.
So, Philip, should people sign up or just show up?
Just show up. 7 o'clock at the Woodridge Library. It's completely free, open to the public. We get folks of all ages and interests, skill levels. It's really a fun group.
I need to send my kids there so they can learn how to cook.
Please do. Chef Teresa is fantastic, both as a chef and as an educator. She's been trained by UDC in how to do these types of classes and really connects well with everybody. And we have a good time and we always eat well. There's always plenty of food.
Sounds wonderful. So speaking of seasonal stuff in the market, what's new in the market?
Ooh. Well, this week we're featuring some new garlic scapes. So a nice change of pace from the normal scallion. We just had ramps come through, the famous local wild onion. And garlic scapes are sort of the next thing that come up. So this is the green part of the garlic plant. Normally we eat the bulb, the root, these are basically the stems of the garlic plant. It has that rich garlic flavor, but kind of looks and cooks like a scallion. So those are coming in locally now, so we're picking those up. And looking forward to squash and peppers and tomatoes all coming through locally next on our way to peach season.
Very good, very good.
And, yeah.
Stock up on those citronella sticks because,
definitely.
It's coming.
They work and they're all natural, inexpensive way to keep the mosquitoes away.
All right. Once again, Philip, where's the store?
The store is at 2006 Rhode Island Avenue Northeast. You can find us on the web at goodfoodmarkets.com, on Twitter at goodfooddc, or give us a call like this person, the old They're
calling right now. Our listeners are calling right now.
Yeah.
All right, Philip. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
Take care. Bye bye.
Bye.
All right. So I gotta go get some of those citronella sticks. We've already got tons of mosquitoes in our yard.
Welcome to summer in DC.
Right. Okay. So first guest today, Mr. Michael Mears from Mid City Finance. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you for having me.
You are well overdue for being in here and talking to us, Mr. Mears.
Well, it's a great thrill. Let me tell you a little bit about myself and Mid City Financial. We're a family owned company. Mr. Eugene Ford Sr. started the company 50 years ago. And in his career, he was responsible for developing, creating, preserving, and financing approximately 40,000 affordable apartment units across the country, with most of them in the Baltimore and Washington MSAs. Today, Mid-City owns around 9,000 apartment units, and our affiliated management company manages 32,000 units. Mr. Ford passed away in October of this past year. But before he passed away, he made it clear that he wanted Brooklyn Manor.
Brooklyn Manor that's at 13th and Rhode Island Avenue, Brentwood and Rhode Island Avenue.
That's right. Yeah. He wanted that to be a model mixed-income community, and it's with that guiding principle that we're operating today.
Very good. And so you're here today to talk about some changes that are coming to Brooklyn Manor.
Yeah. Yeah, but before I talk about the changes, I want to talk about our history of involvement. We first got involved with Brooklyn Manor in 1975, or Mr. Ford did.
And so you weren't part of that then?
I was not part of that. I was just 8 at the time.
Oh, right. Well, that makes sense.
So he got involved in 1975 as part of the renovation at that time, and we put a 40-year loan on the property. And that loan came with encumbrances. So the property's been used as low-income housing from 1975 till currently. But the 40-year loan will fully amortize on August 1st of 2017. So a couple of years ago, we started our planning for the future. And we wanted to build what could be a national model for a mixed-income, mixed-use community. Mr. Ford noted that the concentration of low-income residents hasn't produced great results, and he thought that in a mixed-income community that the outcomes could be better for everybody. And so we... At the earliest point, we committed to retain the project-based Section 8 contract. So that assists 373 families. But in total, the new community, as imagined, it will have about 1,700 residential units. There will be a variety of housing types and price points. So there will be some for-sale townhomes. There will be affordable housing. There will be senior housing. We wanted to have economic and social diversity so that it could appeal to a cross-section of the population.
So there would be rental as well as owning?
Yeah, there'll be rental and for sale. We thought it was important. The property's been a rental property for the last, since it was built in the 1930s.
Oh.
Originally, it was built as... low and moderate income housing for federal workers. As the federal bureaucracy was expanding in the 1930s and 1940s, there was a housing shortage, and so the property was built with that in mind. But our thought is that we want there to be more ownership in the community. We think that's an important element.
So how many units are there currently?
There are 535 apartment units there right now. Today, there are around 450 are occupied. So that's 85 vacant apartments. And one of the things that we wanted to do We wanted to build affordable housing first, replacement housing for the existing residents. And in order to do that, we needed to have some vacancy on the property. So we've been concentrating the vacancy along Saratoga Avenue between Brentwood Road and 14th Street. And right now we're in the planning stages for the first two buildings, one of which will be a 200-unit senior building. The other will be a 130-unit family building. And we believe that once we build those two buildings, it can accommodate the preponderance of residents on the property.
With the thought being that they would stay without having to move and possibly not come back.
Yeah, we have the advantage having bought the Brentwood Village Shopping Center that fronts on Rhode Island Avenue at Montana. In total, we have pretty close to 20 acres, and so we have a unique opportunity where we can do relocations on-site. And so we're using three of those acres to build the replacement housing. A lot of others don't have the flexibility that we have with land. But we did want to build first because we believe that would create a lot of goodwill in the community. And accommodating the seniors was really important to us because right now our seniors are scattered across the 20-acre campus. There are lots of stairs. The buildings are 80 years old, and they aren't necessarily appropriate. And it's been tough for the senior community to stay connected to one another. And so we felt by building a 200-unit affordable senior building that we could build the senior community and then also bring resources to them, whether it's medical or nutrition or other enrichment programs so that our seniors can age with dignity.
Very good, very good. So when you say you were concentrating the vacancies, you mean you're when as vacancies occur, you are then trying to move people around so that you've got an empty building or two?
Yes. So there are vacancies every month that occur through a variety of circumstances. We stopped leasing about 20 months ago, and so it's been a slow.
You stopped accepting new tenants.
Yeah. But the important thing for people to know is we had the property rezoned through what's called a stage one planned unit development, and that established the site plan. It established the zoning, the height, density, the road network, affordable housing, and in that process, which concluded with us getting a zoning order on November 6th of 2015, one of the commitments we made was to retain in perpetuity, which is a really long time, the project-based Section 8 contract that assists 373 families. And so That'll comprise about 22% of the total units in the new community. So of course, it'll start out as 100% affordable, and only at the end will it get down to 22%, which could take the better part of 10 years.
Which is still much more than other places have.
Thank you so much for asking that softball question. So I'm not going to talk about others, but I will say that the city's inclusionary zoning requirement is around 8% of the units.
Right.
And half of those are at 50% of area median income. The other half are at 80%. And so our 22%, to your point, Michelle, 22 is more than 8.
Much more, yeah.
And it's
almost three times.
Wow, who brought their math class today?
I was talking to Merrill.
And that 22% is Section 8.
It is Section 8. Approximately half of those will be accommodated in an affordable only senior building.
Mm-hmm.
The other half ultimately will be dispersed across the campus. It was really important to the Office of Planning and also to the Zoning Commission that we not concentrate affordable housing in one corner of the property or another.
It'd be the same as what's happening now if you did that.
Yeah. So ultimately our commitment was to keep the 373 unit Section 8 contract, and then to have each and every building would have at least 10% affordable upon build out.
So that sounds pretty.
Yeah, so
well, pretty good.
So and then the other part of the commitment was we committed in a lot of other developments where you can't do relocations on site. There's this concept of the right to return. In this case, we're trying to do all relocations on site, so people aren't really returning. They're there,
and
so
there.
So we made a commitment that everybody in good standing, we would provide housing for.
So everyone that wants to stay in good standing will be able to stay.
And the only caveat to that is there are a small number of families who require – there are 4- and 5-bedroom apartments on site right now.
Wow.
And we did not intend to build any new 4- and 5-bedroom families. There were about a dozen families that require them. According to the HUD occupancy standards, using the HUD, this is probably too much of inside housing, but if they're more than 6 people, they require a 4th bedroom. But what we've said is with those dozen families or so, that we'll work with them individually to figure out what their needs and preferences are in the coming years. For at least the next 5 years, we'll continue to have some of those large units on the campus. Possible remedies might be in a multi-generational family. It could be possible that the grandparent would move to the senior building, and then the rest of the family could be accommodated or housed in a 3-bedroom unit.
Mm-hmm. So you will still have 3-bedroom units?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So one of the things that I heard you talk about in some community meetings that really impressed me, and you have been to so many community meetings, so thanks for doing all that very early outreach along this process. But one of the things you said was with regard to the townhome units that will be for sale, one of the programs that you're providing to your current residents is help with their credit and preparation for perhaps becoming homeowners.
That is correct. We're early on in that process, but I guess about a month ago we had a financial literacy program, a 101 course, but we expect to continue those educational programs because we're still really early on. We have to build the first 2 buildings long before we even think about townhomes, but it's never too early to get your credit and financial affairs in order.
Yeah, that's
so. We're trying to encourage people to think longer term and think bigger.
I think that's fantastic, and so the design of the space, and for anybody that's interested in looking at some of the drawings, they can find that on the website is riadc.com.
Correct.
And it's going to be quite an expansive place. You mentioned earlier in today's talk about a new road network.
There is a new road network. We are the existing blocks of land are super blocks. You know, they're 5 or 6 acre blocks of land, and it's very difficult to navigate your way around them. And so we wanted to build a more connected road network with smaller blocks that would allow for more eyes on the street, because the urban design of the property right now, there are lots of courtyards and nooks and crannies that present challenges. And so prospectively, we wanted to have smaller blocks, more eyes on the street just to create a better environment for everybody.
So there'll be a new street actually coming out onto Rhode Island Avenue.
Sure. So the shopping center, Brentwood Village Shopping Center, behind it right now, there's a one block part of 14th Street. We have an application in with the D.C. City Council to close that street. And in its place, we'd introduce a new street right to the east of the firehouse, the Brentwood firehouse. It would take advantage of that intersection, and that would be the new entryway into the community, and it would connect with 15th Street down at Downing. We're also proposing adding a couple other streets in an alley. So on a net basis, we're contributing land to the District of Columbia and improving the network.
Building some streets and saving DDoT the trouble. Yeah. Okay, let's talk about the retail.
That was my next question. What do we expect there?
Sure.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of square footage of retail.
Well, it's approved for up to 181,000 square feet of retail.
Wow.
Our sense of the market is that the market won't be anywhere near that robust. We envision having a full-service grocery store, and we've had preliminary conversations with a couple of the grocers.
Anyone you can tell us about? Probably not.
thanks for asking, but no.
Okay. Never hurts to ask.
We've had preliminary conversations, and they're very fickle, very data driven, and so they see what's happening with the demographics along Rhode Island Avenue. They also like the fact that we're on the car counts along Rhode Island Avenue, and Montana and Brentwood are pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. They also like that we're on the outbound side of the road. Apparently, people. Shop on the way home.
Yep.
Who knew?
And, you know, if you can get some traffic counts during October when the metro is shut down, that'll boost the numbers a little bit.
That's a great thought. But our thought on the retail in the place, our project is the last significant site between us and the Maryland line. Mm-hmm. We don't mind being four blocks up the hill from the Rhode Island Avenue Metro. The context down at the Metro is a little bit more complicated. There's a lot going on. So we like being in the middle of a single-family residential community. And we believe that our property can be the center of civic and cultural life. And we think that our property will be more of a living community and will be a resource to the neighborhoods that we're in.
What is the timeline for some of these things beginning? And
okay, so we our loan on the apartments amortizes August 1st of 2017, and it has some restrictions related to it, and so we can't start construction until after that occurs. But we expect to start on those first two buildings late in 2017. We've engaged an architect, and our intention is to submit a stage two PUD application for those two buildings in September of this year, with the goal of starting construction late in 2017. Those buildings would deliver in mid-2019, and would create a housing source for existing residents that would allow us to accelerate things from there. Phase two would be the area between Montana Avenue and 14th Street. It's around 11 acres of land. The southern 5 acres are where we have designated for for-sale townhomes. And then along Rhode Island Avenue are the big mixed-use, mixed-income buildings. But those would start construction in 2019. The final phase is on the northwest corner of the property at Brentwood Road and Rhode Island Avenue. And that'll be whenever everything else is done.
Great. And
But I should also talk about the shopping center.
Yeah.
So we bought the shopping center in December of 2015. We expect that it'll be vacant later on this summer and could be demolished as early as the end of 2016. We have partnered with a group called Recreative Spaces to try to activate that shopping center parking lot so that it doesn't sit vacant for the next 3 years. We want to find ways to reconnect our community to the broader community and have people come together organically, new and existing, new residents, existing residents. We think that we could spend the next 3 years in a trial and error period where we'll find different activities that work, some that don't. But the early thoughts are that there could be a community garden, farmers market, different musical or arts events, job fairs. And so we want to hear from the community members about what they want, because we're here to make sure that it meets the needs of everybody.
So that location that you're talking about activating with events is actually going to have its sort of inaugural activity as being a stage location for the Uprising Festival on June 26th. So we'll have a stage there in that parking lot and some live music and vendors and some other activities going on there. So that'll just be the start of good things.
Yeah, this whole project and outreach over the last 3 years has been hugely rewarding to me personally, because I feel like we're doing something really impactful, really meaningful, and that it can fundamentally change the community and provide more opportunity for existing residents and new residents. And so that's why I'm really passionate about this, and it's why I spend a lot of time down in the neighborhood.
Well, not only do you spend a lot of time down here, but you actually adopted, Mid-City Finance adopted one of the parks next to the property.
Pastor Matthews at Isle of Patmos, there's between 12th Street and 13th Street on the south side of Rhode Island Avenue, there's a triangular park. And so I've been working with Pastor Matthews and with the city to get that cleaned up. And I can be found sometimes Sunday mornings around 6 cleaning it up. But
I won't see you that early.
Unfortunately, I have seen him that early. It actually happens.
Yeah. Michelle, you're going to have to take my word for
it. Okay, I believe you.
anyway, so we've enjoyed tremendous support in the community. The ANC voted 7-0 to support it. The Zoning Commission voted 5-0 in support. We've had a lot of support from pastors and different neighbors and community groups, and so that's been really, really gratifying.
Yeah, I think in particular the neighbors in that area are eager to have some new retail options. They're eager to have a place where they feel like everybody is part of the community.
Yeah.
So it's very exciting.
Yeah, the focus of the Brentwood Civic Association that represents the homeowners in Brentwood and the other residents there, it's really been on quality of life issues and so public safety and infrastructure, and just that's been the major focus.
Yeah, and so going back to the design of the new development or the redevelopment, you're going to have a park in the middle of that.
That's right. There's about a 1-acre park that's being carved out of the existing land. It'll be in the center, and it'll host active and passive recreation activities.
Yep. And I think that is one of those things that will help bring a sense of vibrancy to the whole
that's right.
section. And you know, one of the things that people had some concerns about was the height integration into the surrounding community, the height of the buildings. And correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that the majority of the height of the buildings will be facing Rhode Island Avenue, and as it goes backwards back into the neighborhood, the height of the buildings will reduce to blend in.
That's right. We're approved in the C2A zoning district, to 65 feet of height along Rhode Island Avenue. And then as you get deeper into the site, there's only 40 feet of height. So down on Downing Street, as an example, we wanted to be sympathetic to the homeowners to the south and just not tower above them. So our row homes will be no higher than 40 feet. We're designing the first two multifamily buildings, and it looks like they're going to be about 45 feet tall. Those are the ones that the senior building and the first multifamily building. So there'll be four-story elevator buildings. And then as you get up on Rhode Island Avenue, you'll probably have six-story buildings.
Very good. Very good. Well, what the next big thing that will happen there, what's the next big stage or step along the way?
Then the next big step, as I said, we're getting the first couple buildings designed, and we'll be meeting with different community groups, getting feedback on the design of those two buildings. They're both going to be done in conformance with the parameters that we have approved in our Stage 1 PUD, but we still have to come back and get community approval on the architecture, materials, loading, parking, and issues like that. So that'll be late this summer, and then we'll submit the Stage 2 PUD application in September.
All right.
The other activity is just the shopping center. It'll be, as I said, vacant this summer and demolished sometime this year. We're working with the city council on that street legislation, and we expect that by the end of this year that 14th Street behind the shopping center will be closed. So those are current events.
That's a pretty big step right there.
Definitely.
Well, thank you, Michael, for joining us and talking to us about the new development. Listeners, again, if you want to see some of the images for this or some of the plans.
It's riadc.com.
Riadc.com. It's pretty simple. And we will we'll just have you back in a few months and get some updates.
This has been a lot of fun. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Michael. All right, welcome back to the second half. I was remiss on the first part of the show, but I want to give a shout out to our sponsors, the Department of Housing and Community Development and the Department of Small Local Business Development. It's their grants that help pay for these episodes and provide you, our listeners, with great information about Rhode Island Avenue Main Street businesses, and provides the Rhode Island Avenue Main Street businesses with some great educational content. So on that note, let's talk to our second guest. And he's a very special guest, Michelle.
He is a very special guest. You know, it's been about a year we've been trying to nail him down. Ron Dixon, welcome to the studio today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. Just so that everyone knows, Ron is the owner of Bliss FM, where we produce this great radio program and where they produce a lot of other podcasts. Welcome.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate your patience. I sort of wanted to wait for a moment when I could come and talk about just more than Bliss FM. And so today I hope we can get into some exciting things we have on the table.
That sounds great. So let's talk about Bliss first. I know you have a lot of other things happening, but as far as Bliss, what types of other shows are available at Bliss aside from our wonderful podcast?
Well, you know, the initial vision was to sort of think of Bliss as the community version of NPR. And so there are so many people that have special interests, and we wanted to really create a platform and an outlet for those types of shows. And so rule number one, when we sat down and came up with the concept, was that we would sort of be an unformatted platform. So unlike tuning in to just news or just entertainment, we're really a hybrid of all of those things. And so we have about 25 shows that stream live right here on Rhode Island Avenue, believe it or not, and we're connecting with listeners all over the world. sometimes I look at our analytics and I'm like, wow, people are tuning in from Africa and all these other countries. But, you know, we really wanted to just sort of be a portal to allow people to communicate to a global audience, whatever that means for them, right? And so our shows are anywhere from business to history to entertainment to sports. And we have about five other shows in development that we're looking to bring online in the next couple of months. And so we're constantly at it and active. And again, we welcome any other individuals or organizations that are interested in connecting with a global audience. We could be that platform for them.
What was interesting when I was doing a little research, I always wondered why Bliss was spelled B-L-I-S,
uh-huh.
and better listening in sound. And I like that.
Well, it was, listen, we spent a lot of time around the table looking at names, and then we just sort of landed organically with the notion of Bliss. And again, we wanted to keep it simple, an easy platform and format for content creators to sort of slip into. The other thing, too, that we're looking to do, and we're probably going to phase this in August, is we've acquired some new technology. It's on order, but we're literally going to be able to flip all of our shows from just being audio podcast to video podcast. And so it's something that we're very excited about and very, very proud to do. And just really meeting the consumers
wrong,
where they are on mobile.
Oh, video,
you don't
man.
You have to be on video, right?
Correct. Correct.
Can,
it's your choice. Yeah.
If we're having good hair days those days, then we'll do it. If not,
I actually have to shave and stuff. You know. Okay, all right. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
Oh, no worries. I mean, but it's important because when you look at platforms like Facebook Live, I mean, it's really transforming how your content can be consumed. And you know, Facebook as a platform has hundreds of millions of minutes of content being viewed every day. And so it just makes sense for us, we think, to move in that direction. And it'll just be simple and turnkey for our shows. You can literally, from your iPhone or iPad, cut between different cameras and do all these things. And so the technology is pretty amazing.
Wow.
And that's one of the things we sort of wanted to pride ourselves on, just being a place where it could be simple, but we could leverage best-in-class technology.
So how did you get into this field? And, you know, I know that you own and operate Bliss here, and I have seen you do the sound and things. But
I clean up. I do it all.
But how did you get into this?
So, you know, my mainstay of business, if you will, was government and management contracting. And we did a lot of work on the meetings and conference side of things. But no matter what, all of our clients wanted us to do media and technology. And so we just sort of looked into the future and said, you know what, there's going to be a time real soon where technology and media will be the intersection for all marketing and communication. And we sort of wanted to get there. And that was sort of the birth of the notion of transitioning from doing more administrative, more logistical kind of work to now doing more marketing, media, and technology work.
I also know, aside from this, that you work with kids and you're trying to secure television and things that happen in D.C., working with the D.C. Film Office. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So today I'm very excited to talk about the All Roads Academy. And it's basically a workforce development training program that's been 2 years in the making. And for some, man, that is a long time. And I tell you, there's been moments where I just wanted to give up. But, you know, just leaving my house today, I see six young men just hanging out on a corner and not really doing much. And so I've always felt that we could have a lot of influence here in this great city if we could create an opportunity for young people to reengage, but do it in a manner and sort of meeting them where they are. I mean, we all know the stats of how media is such a central, and technology is such an essential part of the lives that millennials and others are living these days. And so we've been able to work with the Department of Employment Services, and we've designed probably a training program that they've never seen before. Part of what's taken us so long is that this program is literally so different. And at the core of what we want to do is going to wrap around the needs of our learners and our students. So we're going to do non-traditional things like open up the lab over the weekends, you know, Saturday, Sunday, Fridays and allow, you know, our students to come in. We're going to provide real world hands-on projects. And so that's the other thing we do when we have artists and entertainers and other kinds of media that we're producing. They're going to be hired on those crews and have an opportunity to really get firsthand experience, because they really will excel because they're going to learn by doing. And so this program is, again, is very unique. You know, we're targeting the 16 to 24 demographic that's sort of not fitting in some of the traditional places. And here's the best news of all. It's going to be no cost to them if they're resident. And we've gotten the agency to agree to do an earn-to-learn model. So literally they will be on salary and earning the minimum wage while they're participating in our training program. Wow. So I'm quite excited.
They not only don't pay to attend, but they get paid to attend.
Absolutely.
That's
absolutely
an amazing program.
Absolutely. So we have partners like the film office, and Director Gates has been very open to partnering. Later this year in September, we are holding a audio education event. We'll probably do it at the Howard Theater again. But last year, I mean, we had 600 people show up for this event. So when you think of an educational event and we can bring in top producers from all genres of music to come in and talk about the technical but also the practical side of the business. Last year we gave away 4 home recording studios. So we're going to double down. We've partnered with Chuck Levins up in Wheaton Music. We partner with the Omega School, which is in Rockville. And so this thing is just going to continue to grow. But those were all examples of what a program like this can sort of tie into. And when you can put young people in front of all the people that they admire from a creative standpoint, and they can just become inspired. And so, you know, the inspiration behind this is a huge part of kind of what we're looking to do.
Will you be teaching them outside of radio, video?
Yes.
Options, because you're saying that's big for this. For Bliss
right now. So we have kind of 4 focus areas. The digital media arts, and embedded in that track would be, you know, audio production and live sound and engineering, not music production, because we think that that's can be a passion area. But if you're thinking about employment, that this is not the right city and environment for that. Cinematography and photography. And then if you look at our design track, it's graphic design, it's illustration, it's motion design, but the digital communications, I mean, it's everything from literally understanding how to create effective business communications and how do you advertise and market those things. And then the last track is going to be 3D design and animation. So whether it's game design or whether it's just animating for medical purposes. I mean, NIH is in our backyard. You know, I love watching Dr. Phil because he's always going to have cool animations. And so part of this process has just been getting people to rethink and reimagine what this industry is. You know, we have 3,000 plus police officers in DC that are going to have body cameras. And so now the police department literally has to have a media division as part of what they do. And so marketing, communications, and media is so embedded in so many other industries that sometimes you don't think it exists here. But when you break down the numbers, it's, you know, that part of the creative economy is literally like 59% of all other income and revenue that's flowing through the city. So if you think of all the major news outlets and all those organizations that are here, it's a tremendous opportunity.
It really is. And this, the whole program just sounds fantastic. I can't tell you how excited I am about this.
And we're starting right here. Yeah. I mean, literally right here. We're gonna put a trailer in our parking lot.
And hold on, when you say right here, let's let everyone know where we are. Right here. Where is right here?
So we are conveniently located on the Rhode Island Avenue Main Street. Woo. And we are at 1522 at the intersection of Rhode Island and Franklin, just a short walk from the metro.
Right.
And all the other exciting things that are happening in our community. And so, you know, for me, this is special. I live in this community. You know, I can drive, bike, walk to work. And so to be able to attempt to make a difference right here where I'm at is something that I didn't really know would happen, but something that I've become most excited and proud about.
So you're not just limiting this to to amazing podcasts like this and education for kids. You also are doing some business assistance.
Well, yeah, that's the other part of the exciting news today is that we have partnered with the D.C. Department of Housing and Community Development, and we've said to them that, you know, businesses have other needs. They are struggling to figure out how they can be relevant in a digital economy, and they just need help. And so we've pitched this idea of providing creative services, if you will, to businesses that need it all around the city. But we want to underscore that our focus is helping businesses build, grow, and monetize. Like, it's just essential, and we think it's important. And so the agency bought into this, and we are just starting that process for this funding cycle. And we're literally have chosen 10 businesses that we're going to support this cycle. And they're going to receive support in the areas of content marketing for web and social. We're going to design websites if that's what they need help with, assisting with social media strategies, publishing, automation. Again, all of these simple things that we have to break down the technology and give them a simple plan so that they can implement. And so, again, this is something that I think we will also have an opportunity to impact. And listen, the cool thing is, as our students get up to speed, these will be projects that they can also participate on. So for me, it was about creating an ecosystem where, you know, our students can not just learn in the classroom, but really hands get their hands on. Yeah. Because it's essential. And, you know, I've looked at tuition prices for Art Institute and other kinds of schools like this. And so, you know, the fact that the district has stepped up and said, we're going to cover these costs and we're going to pay you to come. If I were in their shoes, I would be beating down this door. Absolutely. To participate.
I know you all are in the beginning stages. Do you have an idea of how many students would be accepted and when this would start?
Right. So I've kind of suggested that we have a cohort of about 75 students for our first run. And we're going to offer three different time slots. So our format will be Monday through Thursday. We have instructional. We'll have a morning session from 9 to 11:30. We'll have an afternoon session, 9 to 12:30, excuse me. We'll have an afternoon session of 1 to 4:30 and then a twilight from 5 to 8:30. So we're really just trying to meet students where they are. And each of those sessions would have up to 25 students that would participate, and our training program is going to be 8 months long. Okay. But at the conclusion of that, all of our students would have earned 2 digital badges, so showing that they have proficiency in audio or could be graphic design. But then they will have an actual industry certification. And so we're starting with video because we think in this market, if you can hold a camera, if you can edit and do those things, you can most likely find good work. But we're also kind of making it a hybrid learning model where they can, like Kenny is doing, operate a board, set up a light, and do those things. They'll just become way more valuable in the marketplace.
And when do you look to have the first session start?
Well, assuming
that everything goes,
that all the paperwork yes. gets signed yes. off on in the next couple months, we will probably make a decision to start in September.
Oh.
Just to give us enough time to finalize, because we've had to modify the curriculum. We're now in version 4 to sort of meet the city's model of funding. And a core part of this is that we're developing sort of hands-on tutorials. So the way this demographic learned, they're accustomed to going to YouTube and other places and watching a 3-4 minute video as a starting point for their learning. And so we are literally looking at the certification, and we are mapping content so that every lesson, every course we teach will have a corresponding set of video materials. And this is important because if they're not in school, they can now pick up on mobile or at the library or a tablet, and they can sort of be in tune with what took place in the classroom. And so, again, we're really trying to do some non-traditional things to make learning on demand but available at all levels for our students.
Sounds great. It sounds like it'll correspond with the regular school year as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So folks want to find out more about this. How are they going to find out more about this other than?
So working with the Department of Employment Services, we are going to roll out a marketing campaign. I've strongly suggested that we meet the students where they are on mobile and all those platforms. And so I hope that they will embrace and accept our ideas of doing that. So we're going to do a whole campaign around marketing the training program. When they tell us we can do that, we will start immediately because I know that 75 slots will probably get consumed in 2 days if we do this right, and it probably won't last that long. So
we don't have the information now, but we will have it. And
we will have the information on the training program soon. And in terms of the business program, we've created a separate brand called DC Biz Assist, and it's available. The website is up and running at dcbizassist.org. And, of course, we can receive an email at info@dcbusinesses.org.
So, Ron, also, if someone wanted to create a podcast of their own, they could come to Bliss and do that.
Absolutely. They can go to bliss.fm, and they'll have all the information. We probably, again, get 4 or 5 requests every week. They can drop by our studio, and they can find us on social media at Studio202DC.
Very good.
All right. Well, Ron, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yes, it's my pleasure. This was worth the wait.
And we will touch base with you again as this program starts rolling out.
Probably before September.
Yes. Probably. And not only that, we will continue to work together. Of course, you know, we have quite a few events scheduled here in the neighborhood that we're partnering with you with, Kyle. So we're very excited. And Michelle, you probably don't know this, but we're going to do something really cool where we're going to collaborate with Dudley's and with the Main Street, and we're going to
Dudley Beauty College
transform our studio into a portrait suite, right? Oh. So this is real cool. So to introduce us to businesses, we're going to say, hey, you know, your profile on social media and LinkedIn and other places is extremely important. Let us come take your headshots. We're going to retouch it, and we'll make it look amazing if that's needed. But this will give us an opportunity to really have this incredible collaboration. And so once we do it here, we're going to start, of course, Home and Five. But we're also hoping to partner with other Main Streets and move this kind of activity out into the community. And so that's going to really allow us to raise the level of awareness and profile of what we're looking to do.
Yep. Perfect. It's very, very exciting stuff, Ron. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So we should probably wrap up. We're going to take up our full hour here. Thanks, everyone, for joining us again for another episode of Rhode Island Avenue Main Street. We will see you next Friday. Next Tuesday. You'll hear us next Tuesday. I'm just going to stop talking about that. But everybody make sure and mark your calendars for Sunday, June 26th for the Uprising Arts Festival from noon to 6 p.m. here on Rhode Island Avenue Main Street. It's going to be amazing interactive arts journey and exploration. Lots of live music, visual arts, performing arts. Ron's team will be cameras will be flying, so y'all wear your finest. And we'll look forward to seeing everybody there. In the meantime, have a great Tuesday when you're hearing this, and we'll talk to you all later. Thank you.